We're just normal men.
What do you mean, normal men?
We're just innocent men.
Welcome to the Red Ass Podcast, your home for Aggie sports, barbecue, music, and much more. And now your hosts, Rob White and Roy May.
Howdy, guys. Welcome back to the Red Ass Podcast. Today is Tuesday, November 25th. It is a beautiful day on the backside of what was some very nasty weather. But we are leading into one of the greatest times of the year. You have Thanksgiving right around the corner here in a couple of days. Right past that, full-on Christmas season. But in and amongst all of that, one of the greatest holidays in college sports is Rivalry Weekend. And we have arrived.
Well, and I want to start just real quick. And I got to be honest, I was expecting more energy for Rivalry Week, but I appreciate you keeping this kind of at least level to start with, because this is probably going to go completely off the rails today.
Exactly. I wasn't going to sit here and just park this thing at 11 and then rock and roll. Before we get any further, though, I'm Rob White, fighting Texas Aggie class of 2014.
Yes, I'm Roy May, fighting Texas Aggie class of 2015, and I would like to start with a PSA, TED Talk, whatever you want to call this. New Army, specifically New Army, and I'm sorry to call you that, but it is what it is. Anything past you is always New Army. It always will be. I'm New Army to somebody else. It's life. All right.
I mean, you're New Army to me, technically.
Yeah, I see. It's part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing, and I know we've probably talked about this before, but I would like to let you know that as of the final whistle from the Samford game, this is the week that if you get on TV, you are allowed to do the horns down. All right, this is the week when you do it. All right, you don't do it any other week, minus baseball, minus when we're playing them, but this is the week. You have full authority, and quite frankly, as a former Yell leader, I get to say this. You know what? Everybody has senior privileges this week. Everybody's allowed to whoop. Everybody's allowed to do whatever they want. This is the week. And we went through this last year. It didn't turn out our way. But this is a week that it's horns down. You're whooping. I don't care. Let's effing go, man. This is rivalry week. And I just fired off a post a couple of minutes ago. And goes to Texas Football, who's a fantastic follower or follow on X. He's I know he's a sip, I get it, but he gets it, right? He has a brain, and he asked what are the best rivalries in football / something along the lines of where does this one rank? And I gave my five rivalries that I think define college football. And I don't rank them minus Army-Navy. Army-Navy to me is number one. And I'm biased and I don't care. But the four other rivalries, you're going to talk about top five best rivalries in college football in no order. The Iron Bowl, Ohio State-Michigan, which they call the game. But I love watching it. It's a great game. Lone Star Shootout, Red River Shootout. Those are literally the five best rivalries in college football. And you can take... Was it USC Notre Dame, USC Stanford, Florida, Tennessee? Like you could Alabama, Tennessee. Like you can take all of that, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Georgia. They all play second fiddle to those five rivalries. Look, that might be a hot take or a dumb take, but growing up, that's my take. Growing up, watching the games that I watched, like that's my take. And us playing Texas, because it's been so removed because everybody wanted to act like five-year-olds for a while. Like this, and what I love is that the athletic departments were able to at least get the game back on the schedule outside of football for years. Like we were able to play. We were able to play nice. But this is it, man. And it's one of the top five rivalries in all of college football. I don't think anybody would argue that. Anyway, name me three rivalries that you think might be in the top five.
Well, if I had to float one that I think kind of goes a little underrated that I've always loved is the Egg Bowl. Absolutely love the Egg Bowl.
There's a lot of hatred there, but there's not. See, and that's the thing. And I think the Egg Bowl. Yeah, no. Like it's hate week, right? But
Right.
I think rivalries also have to have national implications.
I mean, that's fair. In that same vein, A&M Texas hadn't been that.
Well, I mean, it just hasn't existed, quite frankly.
Well,
But
no, I mean, I know it hadn't existed, but even
well, that's fair.
going,
That's fair. You're
but going back even before, the end of the Big 12 days, those weren't like national title contending games. That's only happened a few times in our history. I mean, if you look at like 1975, that one obviously had massive implications. You had number five against number two. This one's got massive implications. Last year had some massive implications.
I don't think this one has as massive implications as 75. I don't.
No, and that's my
Not
point.
that we
I
have the
mean,
players.
right. Well, what I mean by that is if you look at this game that we're playing this week, we're obviously going to get into all this here in a little bit, so I'm not going to highlight it too much. But there is a lot on the line for both teams in this game this year, as it's true across college football this week, especially in the SEC. You are seeing an incredibly thick rivalry week about to take place between just the various implications that exist. Alabama, if they win, they're into the SEC championship. They lose, they're likely out of the playoff, right? Like that's a very important game against Auburn,
That's it. Yeah, the Iron Bowl. Well, I will say, you know what? Out of those
right.
five, the Iron Bowl probably has more implications
This
historically.
year, well, I mean, well, historically, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just something weird about, especially in a situation like this where it's Jordan Hare at night. And of course, we're going to get into all that here in a little bit. But, as far as like top level rivalries, I mean, it's hard to argue that these five are not, that you mentioned, are some of the absolute greatest rivalries in college football as a whole. I don't doubt any of that because they
Well,
do have, let's say, they do
let's
have
pick the next
implications.
year.
Right. They have their little tier that I personally think that they belong in. I do agree with you. Those five are amazing rivalry games.
Well, I think maybe the Egg Bowl gets overlooked because it's the state of Mississippi. And like
Right.
whether you like that statement or not, it's true. Like it's the state of Mississippi. They don't have any pro teams. They have Ole Miss and they have Mississippi State, and that's kind of all Mississippi has. And so I think maybe it gets overlooked, despite the fact that the game is generally very crazy and they hate each other like a whole lot. I
Oh,
saw a
yeah.
13 post thread about it, talking about what had happened over the years.
Oh, yeah.
So like let's go in the next tier. So okay, we have the Egg Bowl. I think Paul Bunyan's axe isn't that Wisconsin, Minnesota, right?
Yeah. I think,
Missouri, Kansas?
yeah, Missouri and Arkansas.
No, Missouri, Kansas.
I was about to say Missouri, Kansas. Yes.
Yeah,
Border
Missouri,
War.
Arkansas is just a game. Actually, I think they're playing. Yeah, they're playing this week. Oh, we're even picking that game because it's a tight
Oh,
spread for
right.
no reason, quite frankly. Then you talk about like BYU, Utah. Like, there's some great matchups, but I think a lot of this, and maybe this is part of how TV works, these are the games that have been shoved down our throat, right? The third Saturday in October, right? That's Alabama, Tennessee.
Sure.
And I'm not an Alabama fan. I'm not a Tennessee fan. I've been to both states. I understand. I understand like the rivalry, but why does Alabama, Tennessee exist? Kind of thing. It's like why does Texas A&M, South Carolina have a trophy?
Well, and I think to that level is if you look at rivalries, which obviously the big rivalry week here, we always you fall to the mean of what is like your primary rival at the end of the season. That's just one of those things that I think it's really cool that that's how it's developed as time's gone.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing I do appreciate is like some of these other subtle rivalries and the backstory on it. Like people will come back and ask, why does A&M and Baylor have a beef? And people could go back into the historical record and show the various examples of why. I mean, not the least of which was that 1926 fiasco with the car, right? I mean, the fact is, all of these rivalries have story, they have meaning, they have a lot of background to them. If even if it's stupid like it is with South Carolina, a forced game where two teams had never played each other before that game, but it has developed into something that's kind of a fun little quirky rivalry between us and South Carolina. And I think the thing that helped it was South Carolina became competitive finally.
Well, you know what? I've got to go back here. I gave a top five. I almost
Sure.
want to add a sixth because it's one of my favorite games of the year. And I literally, born and raised Texan. I have no reason to care about this game other than the fact of the name. The world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
Fantastic.
Georgia, Florida is must-watch TV no matter what the game actually ends up looking like. And I don't know why. And that's a bucket list rivalry for me, just because I want to go tailgate with Georgia and Florida fans and see what happens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the thing I think I appreciate about that is it falls in category of, I think, the three games that should ever and only ever be neutral site games in the regular season. That is the Red River Shootout, the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, and of course, Army Navy. Those are the three games that I think are perfectly fine being neutral because of geography more than anything, especially for the first two. I mean, you're talking about, Jacksonville is about, I mean, I won't say it's dead center, but it's about as neutral of a spot as you can get between Gainesville and Athens.
Yeah, even
And
though it's
say,
in Florida, it's Jacksonville.
right. I mean, same deal with Dallas, at the Cotton Bowl. In fact, Norman is technically closer to the stadium than Austin is by about 10 miles. So, I mean, right there, that's the thing I appreciate. It's like when you have the geography to make it work and you have the facility in the middle to make it work, I'm totally cool with that. But just these random, oh, hey, we're going to throw Texas Tech and Baylor into the Butt Bowl in Arlington this year. Like, nobody wants that. Play on campus.
And again, we do have to preface Army Navy is the last game of the year. So this,
Right.
even though it's rivalry week, they're not playing this week.
Right.
Unfortunately, on the record, I think we're going to get dusted.
You say this.
But you never know with rivalry week, right?
Right.
And that's the thing. Like there's a deep in like deeply ingrained passion to beat your rival, right? And this world of college football with NIL and the transfer portal and all this, it's a little bit different. These players committed to a university back in the day, right? Like
Correct.
Bucky Richardson came to Texas A&M to play football. He came from Baton Rouge, came to Texas A&M to play football for Texas A&M. And even though he was from Baton Rouge, he learned real quick how easy it was to hate Texas. But now in the more kind of a hired gun kind of mentality that we have now, which again, I don't care. It is what it is, whether you like it or not. I don't think that Casey Concepcion has like the same hatred for Texas that I do. But on the flip side, I'm about to go completely on a rabbit trail here. Because of the culture that Mike Elko has instilled in this, in this program, like this culture. And I saw a video of Concepcion went to a tailgate after the game just to say hi and sign autographs. He like, This is, I mean, it was 1 year, right? I
Right.
mean, he's a hired gun and he's been amazing. He's borderline John Wick, wide receiver and punt returning. But like to go out and embrace the fans after when you should be going home and showering or like going home, dropping all your stuff off and going to Northgate or going to Chimmy's or just doing whatever it is you do. And he hauls off to West Campus and goes to hang out with a tailgate and meet fans. These are the guys, and you look at the evaluation that Mike Elko has done in the transfer portal specifically, right? Because high school kids buy into the coach and then the school. That's kind of my thought. And I know NIL's in there somewhere,
Right.
but high school kids, I think, with this new world we're in, aren't seeing the NIL opportunities that transfers are, because transfers can make direct impacts, right? I mean,
Right.
we've seen it not just here at Texas A&M, we've seen transfers make direct impacts. And so to see something like that and this hired gun mentality, because we're like, oh, they're just here for the money. That's, you know what? First of all, get your bag, dog. Like, get it.
Absolutely.
But for you to come in and like truly want to understand and learn Texas A&M, and again, it means a lot to every fan base. I hate to use this phrase, it just means more. At Texas A&M, though, it does. It does. So these rivalry weeks are still as just intense, I think, because these kids are going to class, they're around camp or they're on campus, they're around their fellow students. I think New Army is starting to figure out how arrogant and awful Texas fans can be. I'm thrilled the
I love
rivalry's
Texas.
back. I never wanted them in the SEC, but I'm thrilled the rivalry is back because Aggies and Longhorns can start seeing each other for who they are. And look, I'm gonna tell you right now, Every Texas fan that I've ever met that graduated from Texas, like went to Texas, like darkened a door in a class, are generally very good people. They're fun. It's like the fun, like it's a ghost of Texas football. He's fun. He'll play back and forth, right? But he's never gonna make a bonfire joke. We're never gonna make a bell tower joke. Like these are the things that are off limits because we respect each other. It's all the t-shirt stuff. And I know that's one thing we've talked about. Like, it'd be great to have more t-shirt fans, right? Because that means we're really good. But I still don't think that A&M t-shirt fans will react the same or act the same. Maybe that's just me. I don't know. Sorry. Bunny trail. We were talking about rivalries. My bad.
No, you're fine.
I want to go next tier of rivalries. I want your opinion on this. So let's say those five are the five, right? Because I only
Okay.
have five fingers on my hand.
Right. I would
So
say, I mean, if we're going down the hate rabbit hole, I mean, it, like, I mean, truly, I mean, we're talking like volume. Like they really, really, really don't like each other. Backyard brawl. I mean, let's talk about Pitt and West Virginia for a minute.
okay. So
You know?
we're like this is so to me, this is second tier. And I
Right.
think it's just second tier because of branding, if nothing
Right.
else. Backyard Brawl and Egg Bowl are absolutely there.
Right.
And what I say, was it Wisconsin, Minnesota, Paul Bunyan's axe?
Yeah, no,
Or is that the
that
big
one's
brown?
a classic in the Midwest.
Or is that the big brown jug? I can't remember.
I want to say
Iowa State.
I'm pretty sure well, Wisconsin, Minnesota, that one's Paul Bunyan. I'm pretty confident.
Yeah.
Now, you know, obviously you get all the classic, you know, in-state big ones, you know. U of versus the state, you know, whether it's farm. Well, actually, I was just thinking about that. You know, you got CyHawk between Iowa State and Iowa, or as we like to call it, El Asico. You know, fantastic rivalry game there. You know, Bedlam was fun, especially when Oklahoma State finally became competitive. You know,
Bedlam's a good one. Nice.
Bedlam was solid. Looking down the list here, which other ones do we
Oh,
have? I mean,
I got a question for you.
all right.
What's the biggest rivalry within the state of Florida?
See, that's a tough question to ask, right? Because I mean, honestly, you know who I think it might be? Florida State and Miami.
I think it might be, honestly. I think Florida's biggest rivalry is Georgia, and after that, it's Tennessee. So
Well,
I think it's got to be the Noles and the Canes, right?
it's not a too dissimilar situation to what we found ourselves in when we first moved into the league, right? A&M goes to the SEC, and all of a sudden, Tech, Baylor, Texas, obviously to an extent, kind of took a back seat in terms of obviously who we're playing on the field, right? If you look at what Florida does, Florida largely plays and focuses SEC, and that's where their rivalry hate is largely pushed towards. Yeah, do they not like Florida State? Absolutely. Do they not like Miami? Absolutely. But they didn't play Miami a ton when Miami was at their peak. Florida kind of avoided them, really. So Florida State was stuck in there. You know, more or less in the cage with Miami there for a while. But that helped develop what became kind of a fun rivalry, especially from two opposite sides of the state between Tallahassee and the city of Miami, just as an example. But, you know, in the cross city rivalries can be fun, especially like years when USC and UCLA were good, right? Yes, Mr. May.
Ah, yes. For those of you just listening, I raised my hand. What are the most overrated rivalries? I'm going to start with SMU TCU.
Well, SMU TCU, I mean, it's hard to rate it high in the first place. I mean, it's got classic, like Southwest Conference tie, but once again, it's two private schools in DFW just trying to figure out who's got better money.
Stanford Notre Dame. I think it's completely overrated.
Okay, you know what? On a counterpoint, Cal Stanford is freaking awesome.
Cal Stanford, yes. Notre Dame Stanford, no.
Notre
Notre Dame
Dame's.
USC, no.
I mean, so Notre Dame, who would you claim as their biggest rival? That's a tough question.
I'm not going to say that on this. I won't be. Nope. Nope.
Good competition past a certain point. But
Film
man,
towers.
yeah. I just yeah, they're so.
So, think about some of the biggest overrated rivalries, though, right? So, I don't think the Egg Bowl is overrated.
Absolutely not. I think that one's underrated in a lot of
I
people's
think
mind.
the Egg Bowl is second tier, and I think it's like knocking on the door top tier.
Absolutely. I
But
mean,
it's like,
Washington, Oregon, It's got its
But you know
moments,
what?
sure.
I like the Apple Cup. I might
Yeah.
put them in the second tier.
Right.
Oregon doesn't have a rivalry because they don't want to play Oregon State anymore because they're babies. It's just a bunch of children saying nonsense. I used to love watching Oregon State, man.
Yeah.
So that's one that's broken up because of conference realignment, which I think is just crap.
Right. Well, you got another good
Illinois
one coming.
Northwestern is, I mean, that's, I'm trying to think through the states. Like, there's just not that many rivalries that
Okay.
kind of ring the bell,
All right,
you know?
let me float one at you real quick here. What would you say is your favorite dead rivalry? The two teams don't play anymore, really.
Oh, wow.
Because if you go down the list, man, there are some good ones. Like going forward.
By the way, we didn't prepare for this part of conversation at
No, not
all.
at all. No,
I'm
this is
legitimately stumped.
it. But that's all right. I mean, if we're looking at it, I mean, looking at like an Alabama LSU game, right? Like that was a SEC West matchup every single year, and it's not going to be. It's going to get broken up quite a bit because
I
they're
just
not.
don't think that was a rivalry so much as it was an important game for a lot of years.
Which it is, and I
I
think that brewed. I mean, that ended up brewing a lot of extra depth because when you're the two biggest guys on the block for years,
Yeah,
yeah.
it was a huge game. I still don't think it was a rivalry. I don't think that it's hard to brew that hate despite like it being an important game, right?
Right.
I mean, you'd have to go back decades, if not more. I mean,
No, sure.
gosh, I don't know, A&M Baylor,
I
like
mean,
again, in baseball, A&M Rice. I don't.
oh God, yeah, that was a lot of fun back in the day. But see, that's the thing, right? Like those are games that are brewed out of what naturally came. Like A&M TCU in baseball, there's no reason that should be a rivalry, but it was for many, many years, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's brewed out of competition, whereas
Right.
even though it's regional, like that's brewed out of competition. But now that we don't play anymore, like I don't see TCU as a rival in baseball.
Well, and the two guys that were largely involved with that rivalry, Childress and Schlossnagel, are no longer at their respective spots.
Right. And so we go back to the A&M South Carolina kind of manufactured rivalry.
Right.
Here's another one, and I found this fascinating. I read this, this fall at some point. Arkansas and LSU don't care about the Golden Boot. Like they just don't give a shit. Like they don't understand why people think it's a rivalry. They're like, what, we're playing LSU or we're playing Arkansas. Like, they don't think of it, even though there's a trophy involved. They're like, yeah, whatever, we don't care. And so I thought that was interesting. Like you want to talk about a manufactured like rivalry. That one and us in South Carolina, even though Arkansas and LSU have been going for a lot longer, they just
Sure.
don't care. Like there's no hate there. There's no, it's just where Fayetteville exists and where Baton Rouge exists. There's no regional conflict. Somebody just said, hey, it looks like a boot. And so they decided to make a trophy. That's what it feels like because neither fan base gets fired up about that game in the sense that it's a rivalry for a trophy.
Well,
We get fired up for South Carolina because we're sick of dropping the ball every once in a while against a team that we shouldn't. But do you care about the Bonham Trophy? I mean, do you?
I mean, obviously I want it, but that's fine. That's typical. Yeah, I mean, see, that's the beauty of rivalry. There's depths to it, and there's and you do weigh these things differently, right? I mean, I don't weigh my hatred of Baylor the same as I would necessarily weigh my hatred of maybe an LSU or a Texas, right?
Right.
Like those are just two teams that I kind of hold over the top, and those are two teams I dislike for very different reasons. But see, that's the beauty of it, right? You have different flavors of teams that you don't like, and then you start developing other flavors of why you don't like teams, like A&M and Ole Miss. No one's going to call that a rivalry, but there for a while, Jimbo and old Lane Kiffin going back and forth, that was a beef, Like there's examples of that throughout college football, but that's why we love it.
Well, I think a lot of it also comes down to, I'm a little bit older, even though you're a class ahead of me, I'm older.
Right.
And so I have a lot of Southwest Conference foes that, quite frankly, if we started playing them again, I'd hate them.
Well, I mean, Texas Tech would be on that list immediately if you look
Wake
at
Tech,
team,
Cougar
right.
High, Rice, Baylor,
TCU,
SMU,
SMU.
you, like all of them. They, so that's like a deep-rooted, they just were always our foes in conference. And but again, like we said, with conference realignment, I think rivalries have changed.
They have.
So it's nice to see the ones that, like the Egg Bowl, right? That's a long-standing one. Ohio State, Michigan, long-standing. Army, Navy, doesn't matter what conference they're in, right?
Good old-fashioned hate, man. We haven't even talked about Georgia, Georgia Tech.
No, Auburn, Georgia. There's another one.
Yeah.
That's probably next tier. And for me, maybe it's weird. See, Georgia Tech is weird because again, we go back to the fact that Georgia Tech hasn't really been competitive in it.
Right.
And I think that even alludes to the whole, us and LSU, it wasn't really a rivalry until we started winning,
Right.
right? Like it can't be a rivalry if it's one-sided. It just can't. You can dislike your in-state opponent, but it doesn't really matter if you're Georgia Tech running the triple option for 34 years
Right.
and Georgia just beating the crap out of you. So unfortunate that the Georgia Tech game won't be better this year with Haynes.
Yeah.
But it's, that kind of is what it is. But yeah, Georgia Tech's okay to me. It's always been a big brother, little brother, or like SEC, ACC kind of thing.
Right.
But again, like, dude, it's rivalry week. You
It
can't
is.
ask for you can't ask for anything better.
No.
And quite frankly, I would like to add this ranking to the list. There are two elite weeks where you can day drink. The week of Thanksgiving is
Oh, yeah.
ranked number two, only behind the week between Christmas and New Year's. So if
Right.
you find yourself cracking a beer at 3 p.m. or 2 p.m., 2 p.m. local time, if you will, and enjoying just the holidays, go off, dude. Because you want to talk about rankings, those are the 2 day drinking weeks. You can't day drink around July 4th. You can't day drink around, well, I mean, there's probably some people that drink around Valentine's Day, but it's for unfortunate reasons. But like Memorial Day, Veterans Day, like there's kind of weekends or days, but it's Thanksgiving week, right? It's
Right.
Thanksgiving week, it's rivalry week. And then you go into like the week after Christmas, where all you do is for 4 or 5 days look at your credit card statements and cry, right?
Right.
But like heading into New Year's, planning for the New Year's celebration, blah, blah, blah. So this is an elite week for having a beer during the day.
No
It's all
question.
right. Oh, and by the way, we beat Samford and we held them under 100 yards. There's your Samford recap.
Yeah, no, you did everything you needed to do in a game where you had to take care of your own business. You sat the starters starting in the second quarter. You did, I mean, no complaints. You got some key experience for guys. I liked what I saw out of Brady Hart down the stretch. I liked a lot of what we saw from plenty of the backups in terms of receivers, in terms of defense. I mean, come on, no complaints. You did your job.
I was kind of shocked. I think Brady Hart, and I'm not trying to, obviously we don't like to bang on anybody on this podcast. I thought Brady Hart actually looked a little bit better than Miles O'Neal.
He
And
did.
that was shocking to me given what I saw out of Miles O'Neal in the spring game.
Yeah, and he's like 17.
Literally,
Yeah,
like,
he's a
he's 17.
kid.
He's like Ryan Williams last year. Did you know he's 17 years old?
Yeah, 17.
But I'm with you. I was glad that there's two things that I love to see. Getting people in the game,
Yes.
including the all 12 man kickoff team.
That was nice. I'm so glad we snuck that in. Now,
And hold on real quick, I'll let you go. Everybody stayed healthy.
everybody stayed healthy. Question, how do you feel about the kicking game?
I am not as confident as I was on Friday.
And see, that's the kicker, ironically, in this situation.
Really?
If it
Really?
comes down to A&M having to win games via kick, can we nut up and get it done?
Well, and here's my thought on this, and this is, the elephant in the room, right? This is super obvious and easy. The only time you need to kick should be an extra point. And as long as we can keep that mentality, because I'll be quite honest, nobody in this locker room is blaming anybody. We saw that in South Carolina. We've seen it all year long. Nobody's blaming anybody. The body language on the sideline is good. Nobody's mad at the other side of the ball. They're like, all right, how can we, okay, what can you do and what can we do? What can we do to help you? What can you do to help us? Let's make that happen, right? That's really been the story of this season, quite frankly, because
Yeah.
we've had some bad halves, bad quarters. And I think Marcel Reed and the offense is going to go, you know what, Randy? You know what, Zirkle? We got you, dog. The only time you're going to need to kick, it'll be no pressure, extra point. We got you. And I could see, like, given everything that we've seen this season, how we've won, how we've come back, how we've been resilient, how we found different ways to win, offensive, defensively, quite frankly, special teams, right?
At times, yes.
And so you look at the reality of the offense going, you know what? We won't put you in those situations. And that I feel like that's their approach, as opposed to, dude, you got to stop missing kicks. They're going, let us put you in a better situation to succeed. Because again, I would love to go back and figure out how many times I've used this word, but freaking culture, man.
Culture. Yep.
It's culture. The offense isn't blaming the kicker. They aren't blaming Randy or Zirkle. They're saying, hey, what can we do to put you in a better situation? You know what? We'll put you in a situation. Now, again, though, I mean, it's concerning because some of these games may come down to field goal kicks, but I trust in the coaches to put whoever looks the best on the field. If they miss, they miss. We've responded to misses. We responded to two misses, as a matter of fact.
Well, and speaking of Jared Zirkle, on the day he goes 2 for 3, hit a long of 39 yards, made all of his extra points, looked like he was getting more comfortable with each additional kick. So maybe it's not the end of the world on that front. Maybe he ends up becoming something we need later. But as it stands right now, yeah, it's a bit of a weak point, but let's just do what we need to do and score touchdowns because that's just way easier.
I just feel like it's easy to say that's the weak point, right? And quite frankly, when you look at it, it's glaring because we just saw it, right? College kickers in general are not very good. There's probably three or four kickers every year that are worth going to the NFL. The rest of them are, above average, pretty much. So it's easy to nitpick when you're 11 and 0, right?
Always.
And not to mention, I mean, saw it South Carolina, it's just bonking. It's frustrating because even though kickers and punters are people too, we still expect them to do their job, their assignment, right? Their assignment. If you're a kicker, you put it between the uprights. If you're a punter, you don't punt it to Niblett this week.
No, at all.
You punt while you get the ball off. You don't fumble the snap. Like, special teams are special in the sense that they're not as frequently used, obviously, right? So it's special because it only happens here and there. But one miscue on a special teams play can completely blow up the game.
You can't.
So that's where I get the concern for the kicker. But I just, again, I have full faith in Coach Elko to put the right person out there at the right time on the right hash or left hash. How about the correct hash, football term?
Whichever hash, yeah, pick a hash.
It's just, it's a concern, but it hasn't lost us a game yet.
No, it hasn't.
And I don't want to say, you know what? It hasn't lost us a game. I'm not going to say yet. It hasn't lost us a game.
Well, and
It put us in more difficult situations, but we haven't lost a game because of kicking. You know how I know that? We haven't lost a game.
that's true. You're sitting right where you want to be, right? You're 11 and 0, and we've been talking about it. We've been leading up to it. Here it is, Texas game, Lone Star Showdown. It is time to break it down a little bit. This is the week. We've said it before. We'll say it again. Today is the day. This is the week to do it. Let's go.
Man, some of the get-in ticket prices I've seen are pretty insane, which is crazy because even if Texas wins this game, they're not going to the playoffs.
So that's where the interesting part of the conversation comes in, right? Because it seems to be that that seems to be the logic, right? I mean, Texas and A&M implications on the game. Let's break that down for a quick moment. A&M wins the game,
From
right?
a
If
fundamental
it's like,
standpoint,
well, let's say if A&M wins the game, you are now in the SEC championship game for the first time, which is awesome. Outside of you losing and then Alabama and Ole Miss both dropping, you're in the championship game, right? That's right where you want to be. Great. You'll play Alabama, potentially Georgia if Alabama can't close the deal. Regardless of what happens in that game, you're a top four seed, you're locked in, right? As a one loss or a zero loss SEC championship game appearance team, you're going to be in that position. Everything's great and good. Texas is going to go play in the Pop Dart Bowl or whatever, right? Yeah, it's going to be fine.
hey, they don't deserve to be in the Pop-Tart Bowl.
Yeah,
I need the
sorry.
Mayo Bowl.
Alamo Bowl.
I need the mayo bowl. Just
Alamo Bowl. That's a classic form. Let's leave them there.
I need the mayo to be dumped on Sark because there's a lot of future memes that I'm gonna need in my life.
Fair. Now, all that happens and everything's great and good. Obviously, we're excited because A&M just completes the undefeated regular season and you're positioned great for the playoff. You turn around, let's say you lose this game. In all likelihood, outside of the SEC title game, they thanks to these tiebreakers that exist.
Weird
It's
tiebreaker.
weird, but
Told
it goes back to what would he, all right, what do we got, Roy?
I was told there would be no math.
I'm not okay. We're not mathing. No
Wait,
math.
we're not going to math these tiebreakers
No,
because
I'm not gonna math any tiebreakers. I'm just gonna say the way it's currently set up, because of how poorly our competition did not live up to their expectation on the season, we're gonna get punished for that. And that's okay. That is what it's gonna be, what it's gonna be if we lose the game. However, A&M in all likelihood falls to maybe five or six. Congratulations. You get a first round playoff game at Kyle Field in December. Which would be amazing. And on top of that, if we have analyzed anything over the past several years, I think the playoff was fascinating last time around because all four top seeds did not make it out of the quarterfinal round. Why? I think they sat too long. They were resting on their laurels for too long. They were out of sync. They were out of juice. The teams that competed in the first round got a chance to actually get back into the system, feel themselves, get a win. And you're sitting there ready to go against a team that's basically been just chilling out. Yeah, they've been practicing. Yeah, they've been getting prepped, but they don't have that same game experience. They've been sitting on their butt for the last month, right? So at the end of the day, this is the perfect win-win scenario for A&M. But obviously, far more importantly than that, you still want to win the game.
Well, I think, I understand the everybody got to buy a loss thing. I think the seeding last year was kind of crappy. But
Sure.
going back to like worst case scenario, you get to host a playoff game at Kyle against what will probably be the group of five team. Like,
Bad, not a bad spot to be in, man.
I mean, but I'll say this like full bore. I want it all.
Same.
I want to beat Texas. I want to win the SEC championship. I want that trophy in bright. And
Yeah.
I'm fine with that bye week. I really am because I trust Elko and his staff to properly prepare them mentally and physically and get them prepared for a game. And I, again, there's a ton of different scenarios, but I think to me, it's, man, that, like, don't waste this year. You know, the last time we went 12-0.
Oh yeah, 92, and we
Yeah,
lost in the it's a lost in the Cotton Bowl to Notre Dame.
you know what we did in that season finale though? We beat Texas in Austin 34-13.
That's something I was looking at that I found very fascinating because if you look at some of the results that took place that season, they're not too far off from what happened this year. You beat LSU in Baton Rouge. You beat Mizzou at Mizzou. You're playing Texas at Texas, and they won that game too. We're sounding like really bad Dr. Seuss here, but the fact is, that's what's happening right now. Texas A&M has an opportunity to put a stamp on this thing. And on top of that, you're going to do it at a place that, if I have found anything this week that has been more fascinating, Texas fans have been a little more on edge than normal.
They're a little defensive right
They're
now.
very defensive right now. I feel like anytime there's been a post, I mean, like this was just a quick example. I think it was yesterday, Ghost makes a post about, what is your favorite moment from the A&M Texas rivalry? And we could go down the rabbit hole for many, many different reasons on both sides. I mean, you can go down the bonfire rabbit hole because obviously that's huge for Aggies. That was huge for a lot of, that's number one, I think, all time.
And I think Texas fans will probably actually agree with that.
The ones that actually know their history, yeah, they'll agree with that. I completely hold on to that thought process. As a personal, being in the stands, like the most critical thing that happened for me, because that was the reason I ended up coming to school here. I get invited down in 2009 by my cousin Melissa. She said, "Hey, you should come out to the A&M Texas game."
That the
I was
Cyrus Gray game?
no, that was 2010.
Okay.
That was my senior year. I mean, that was my freshman year of college. We're talking senior year of high school. I get invited down. I was still back and forth between wanting to go to Oklahoma and A&M. I was right there on the edge. I'd already gotten my acceptance to Oklahoma. I was still waiting on A&M to come in. But I get invited to the game by my cousin. And we go to Midnight Yell, which at that point was 8 o'clock because it was right before Thanksgiving. So they moved it up. That was my first experience of kind of getting the flavor of what A&M was all about. The next day, I go sit underneath the overhang of the third deck on second deck, like second to last row. I'm like all the way up underneath this overhang, looking down.
Not the worst seats for that game back in the day, because it always had crappy weather.
Well, let's see, and it was a little cool out, right? It was a little chilly, but otherwise it was okay. Third play from scrimmage, Jerod Johnson on 3rd and 9 just slings one to Jeff Fuller. Absolute dime piece of a pass. He runs it in for a touchdown, and everybody around me completely lost their minds. And I mean, I'm getting high fives. I got dudes in pots that are just sitting there bumping me and high fiving. And that game was so great and competitive and a wonderful fight. We lose 49-39. And it was at that moment I thought to myself, they didn't win, but damn it, those are some fighting Texas Aggies. And I was sold by a loss. So I post about that. And like half of the comments underneath it are Longhorns being like, it's a loss. Oh, get bent, Aggie. And I'm like,
Yeah, reading comprehension is difficult.
it's like, but also I'm like, that was a really fast and kind of a defensive reaction. Are y'all scared about what's about to take place?
They are.
I think they are.
And we'll get into this in a second. I have a quick question for you. This is like a this or that kind of thing, right?
All right.
Would you rather win 34-13 to mirror that year, or win 13 to nothing?
See, 13-0 has such awesome implication for a lot of different reasons, but I think ultimately that would be kind of the perfect way to win that game because at that point it's a shutout in Austin. Yeah, they hold you down, but if you shut them out, and let's say you miss an extra point on another touchdown, or you end up getting two field goals in conjunction with the touchdown,
So
whatever that looks like,
four field goal attempts.
yeah.
Yeah,
Right. But you're sitting at 13-0. If you have a 3-0 score, 13-0 score, my goodness gracious, could you imagine? And the best part is on the score bug, because we would be listed the first team, it would be 13-0. I'm telling you, man,
was part of it.
it
Yeah.
would be amazing if that panned out that way. Personally, though, man, I just hope we stomp them. I mean, I hope it's an abs, if I had to. I mean, I'm sure we'll get into score predictions, all that fun stuff later. But I hope by the fourth quarter, it's looking a lot like it did Missouri. I hope it's looking a lot like it did in Baton Rouge. I hope that this stadium has 20 to 25,000 Aggies just singing their songs, loving life, and Texas fans realizing that this is a new reality.
I'll tell you what, the band going to march down Congress, you want to talk about bringing back the rivalry.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see how that goes, quite frankly, because I could see it not going well.
No.
But all right, man, let's get into it. You want to get into the picks first, or you want to get into this game?
You know what? How about we just go ahead and get into the picks real quick? We'll break down this game hard at the end and then do our
Yeah,
pick
because obviously
and
we're gonna,
do our pick for that.
yeah, obviously we're gonna pick it, and we're gonna pick it last, obviously. All
Yeah,
right.
we'll dive into that.
We both sucked last week, 2-3.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of keeping up with some of those games. I mean, there was at least a couple of results that I was cool with. I mean, I'm pretty sure, right, I picked Pitt.
Yeah, you got Pitt. I took Georgia Tech, but you
Right.
took Cincy, and I took BYU.
Right.
Right, so that was the one discrepancy. We both missed on Florida. We both were right on SMU, and we both missed on Mizzou. So we
Yeah.
both went 2-3, which puts you at 36-31, and I'm at 37-30. So
Very close. Very
just a
close.
touch above mid, basically.
Yes, a touch above mid, but a positive record over the course of the
Yeah.
season. And for a couple of guys that really don't know as much as we like to think we do, that's not bad. That's
I don't
better.
know. Yeah, I don't know shit.
Yeah,
All
no.
right, so it's obviously rivalry week. All of these will be rivals. One of them actually is a rivalry, even though those listening may not believe it. All right. In fact, two of them. I pick the tighter lines. I don't pick rivalries out of emotion. Like, we're not going to pick the Iron Bowl. Like, Alabama's, I think, 6.5 or 7.5 on the road. Like, we're not picking that game.
Man, but if I did, you know who I would pick?
Alabama. Yeah. No, I would pick Alabama. You can pick Auburn all day.
Well,
We're not. I mean, if you want to add a bonus pick, we can throw that in there, but.
it's fine. The only thing about that game I find very fascinating is the fact that Auburn came out and brought themselves a brand. I mean, they brought in another quarterback, and he looked real good, man.
The only rivalry game with a big line that I'd even be tempted to screw with is the Egg Bowl.
Fair enough.
Because it's in Starkville, and this Kiffin stuff is, I don't care what Jordan Chambliss tweeted out, like, bro, you're not focused. You're distracted. The fact that you had to go to X to post
Right.
means you're paying attention. All right, so first one, we've got Arizona on the road at number 25, Arizona State. Obviously a rivalry. Arizona State is 1.5 point favorites at home, which means Arizona's probably the better football team.
Yeah, I mean, they've been looking like it too. I mean, they're on a four-game winning streak right now. They just took care of their business against Baylor. They took down what was potentially a playoff contending Cincinnati team. I mean, they've been on an absolute tear since that tight game with Houston. Hard to argue what they've been doing over there. Arizona State, they're on a good little three-game winning streak after also, ironically, losing to Houston. But, just that's a rite of passage for the state of Arizona this year.
What
But yeah, you're gonna,
a crappy rite of passage.
yeah, what? Yeah, you have to lose to Cougar High. Like, come on now. But it's hard to argue what Arizona's been on recently, man. They've been on a hell of a tear. On the road, Tempe, Arizona. There's gonna be a lot of tempers flaring. It's gonna be very, very tight in terms of the focus. So dad's an Arizona State grad. I tend to lean that direction. I do like them.
You're taking Sun Devils, huh?
Wildcats.
Taking Zona?
Bear
Same.
down. They've
Yeah.
been on an absolute tear lately. The way that they looked against Baylor, the way that they just absolutely handled Cincinnati. I
Oh,
like.
and for the record, I've written all my picks out, so I'm not picking to stay above you. I've already written my picks out.
That's fine. So who'd you have?
Oh, I had Zona.
Yeah, Dona too. All right.
I got the Wildcats.
Wildcats.
All right, next is number 14, Vandy, going on the road to number 20, Tennessee. Tennessee is a 2.5 point favorite. This is a rivalry game, although it's one of those kind of muffled rivalries because Vandy has been a doormat for so long. But it's an in-state rivalry. They have Diego Pavia. Tennessee has an outside shot at the playoffs. Like, it's way outside, but it's actually like if I were to do this on a baseball field, Tennessee is standing on the warning track. Texas is in the bleachers behind the wall. I Tennessee's got a shot. There's a lot for Tennessee to play for. Vandy has got to win.
Yeah, well, the trouble with Tennessee is what your three losses have all been to ranked opponents, right? I mean, you lost to Georgia, you lose to Alabama, you lose to Oklahoma.
Those are quote quality losses.
Quality losses, sure, absolutely. Now, you did turn around and you take care of your business against Florida. Looked dang good against Florida. Yes, Mr. May.
Here's a question, since we're talking about rankings and ranked losses. Do you think that college football should morph into the quadrant 1, 2, 3, and 4 like basketball?
Maybe. I mean, see, the thing I absolutely despise, and we have to deal with it every single year, is the fact that a ranked win loses value every week because that team fell down. And I think that's just silly to me. Because at the point, if you're going to rank somebody, if you go to a quad system, what that does is it does keep them pooled right where they should be, ideally.
For the
I
most
mean,
part.
right.
This is a discussion for another day. I'm sorry.
No, sure, that's fine. Let's,
That's next week.
yeah, that's next week. We can jump into
Yeah.
that.
Let's have the quad discussion next week because
Yeah.
that might be an entire podcast.
So just looking at the most recent games, I mean, Vanderbilt, whew, they took care of their business. Absolutely took care of their business against Kentucky, who had been looking a lot better over the last few weeks. If anybody hasn't been paying attention, Kentucky's been looking good.
People were picking Kentucky to win. I'm like, they're looking better, but I mean, That's the difference between being a turd and like being just the turd that's left on the grass. Like
Right.
Kentucky, the bar isn't real high to improve at Kentucky. So
No.
I was shocked that people were picking Kentucky to upset Vandy or even cover.
I could see them beating Louisville though. You know, like that's just kind of one of those things. You know, they're one of those teams right now that has, been on an upward movement, but Vanderbilt put an end to that very quickly. I mean, Vanderbilt absolutely smoked him, and that score line, 45-17, didn't even really do that game justice. I think Vanderbilt dominated that game, just like Florida was dominated by Tennessee. Mind you, we didn't even talk about this last week. Part of the reason why I was picking Florida in that game, I didn't realize that Florida had not lost to Tennessee there in Gainesville since the Bush administration, like 03 or
Yeah,
03, 04.
that's one of those goofy rivalries. Remember for a while where when we first got in the conference and we played Auburn and basically you couldn't win at home no matter who
Right.
you were. Yeah, it's one of those goofy rivalries. But again, like Tennessee is ranked 20, Vandy's 14. Tennessee is a 2.5 point favorite. I think the shine has worn off Vandy. I think a lot of that, honestly, I think a lot of it is just like, okay, fine, Vandy's done. So much for the Cinderella story. Personally, I've got Tennessee in this game, though. I think Tennessee's a good football team. I think Vanderbilt showed, especially in the Texas game, just their deficiencies on defense. Their perimeter and safeties and to an extent even linebackers. I mean, they look like they were running in concrete, man. So I've got Tennessee to beat Vandy.
Well, and I also have Tennessee to win. I mean, I think with Tennessee playing, obviously, on top of that, being at home, Vanderbilt understands that this game's got a lot of implication, but I still think that there's a lot to be desired, at least in my head, for Vanderbilt. You know, they need to go out there and prove that, that Tennessee is not necessarily the mountain. You know, they want to go further, and I don't know if they have that yet.
Yeah, to me, like I to and I I'm not saying Tennessee's a juggernaut by any means. Obviously, they're ranked lower, but their losses again to some pretty big time programs and looked good in losing. This is just one of those things where I think Vandy maybe there was a little bit more hype than there was substance, and I think
Could be.
UT I think UT is a good football team. I do. I mean, they're not elite by any means. I'm not saying that, but I think they're a good football team. It's at home, Tennessee. There's still an outside shot. I neither like nor dislike Josh Heupel. I'm taking Tennessee in this one because I think Tennessee understands the ramifications. So next one is number 23, Cougar High going to the Toilet Bowl on the Brazos to play Baylor, and Baylor is a 2.5 point favorite.
See, I like calling it the Bano on the Brazos.
The what?
I like calling it the Bano on the Brazos,
That's fair.
because it does look like a toilet right next to the Brazos River. It's kind of beautiful in its own
Azul
weird
del baño.
way. Man, like that's a tough. I mean, that's a tough game for me.
It
I
was a
mean,
tight line, so I picked it, man. I know.
see,
I'm gonna get caught in the
you're
line here.
getting me geared up for rivalry week. I'm thinking about Alabama and Auburn. I'm thinking about those type of games, and you're going to throw me Baylor and Houston?
Well,
Get out.
you're gonna hate the next one.
I'm sure I will.
I've got Cougar High.
I'm just going to
All
pick Baylor because screw you for doing this to me.
day.
And you know what? I hope Baylor wins just to piss you off.
I gotta be honest. I hope both teams lose and have a really great time.
It's one of those.
I'm picking tight lines, dude. It's not my fault that these rivalry games are touchdown plus freaking lines.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
I'm not picking Auburn to beat Alabama. I'm not.
I would have.
Well, because you're insane.
No. Rivalry week. How many times are we going to say this on this podcast? Rivalry week means the lines mean nothing. And I hope you learn that. I hope you learn that on
I
Saturday night.
hope rivalry week goes chalk. So there.
Okay, well, you know what they say about opinions. We both have one. We won't
All
go
right.
much further than that.
I got it. Here's the next one. You're gonna love this one because this is a 2.5 point line. This is a close game. Number 22, Missouri on the road at Arkansas.
You know what? I don't hate that. Because at least that's within the league. God.
You're lucky I didn't pull an ACC game out of my ass this week.
I'm glad you didn't. Thank you. So looking at Mizzou and Arkansas, let's bring. The question is, does Taylen Green go? That's
I
what.
honestly, I'm gonna check right now. And again, I'll tell you my pick first, so I'm not playing off the fact that
Okay.
I'm ahead in the picks,
All right.
but by one. I don't think it matters. Hardy is just a dude. I'm taking Missouri.
Yeah.
Because I think Hardy can keep Green off the field if he does go.
Well, and the thing is, I think Hardy against this particular offense, I mean, against this particular defense with Arkansas, if we learned anything about them. They're extremely porous. I think Texas showed that last week. And every other team has shown that this year. People referring to Arkansas film need to stop doing it because Arkansas is literally bottom tier defense in college football.
I'm just shocked it's a 2.5 point line, quite frankly. I thought it would be like a 12.5 point line. Like
Yeah, no, give me the Tigers.
zero respect for
Yeah.
Missouri right there on that line.
Give me the Tigers all day.
Yeah. All right.
I think Eli knows what's at stake there. Yeah, it's in Fayetteville. They don't care. Their season's long over. They're sitting at what, 2-9?
Yeah, not great, Bob.
Not great, Bob.
And maybe this is a trophy game. I don't know. This is Bobby Petrino's last chance to actually get the job. And he ain't gonna get it.
I highly
All right,
doubt it.
so that brings us to our game, number 17. Yes, number
Yes.
three, Texas A&M University. You're fighting Texas Aggies at number three in the country, 11-0, undefeated. Ridiculous third down defense. Gonna own the trenches. Offensive and defensive line are the strengths. That's how you win in this league. As long as we can. Kind of weather the storm of Sark's ability to script the first 10 to 20 plays of a game, because I think he's not a very good offensive coordinator, but I think the way he scripts the beginning of a game is very elite. If we can avoid that first, like literally first possession, wide receiver screen to Wingo, and also avoid the fake to that and the ball over deep on a post,
Exactly.
between those two, they have not seen a defensive front like this, and throw Georgia in there. I'm going to tell you right now, this defensive front is filthy. I think we're better than Georgia across the front. I think while their strength is probably their rushing defense, like of kind of all four facets,
Right.
passing, running, defending the pass, defending the run. Like they haven't seen this offensive line with Tommy Moffitt. It's been retooled. There's rotations. They haven't seen a quarterback like Marcel Reed. And while Arch, I get it, he's put up stats. He's looked better.
Yes.
He's not throwing dirt darts every third pass. I feel like he's able to throw better passes because he hasn't been rushed. He hasn't been pressured. He hasn't had to move. And I get that he can run, but I'm going to tell you right now, the pressure he's going to face in this game is going to be something that I don't think he's ever seen.
Well, and I think what this game is largely going to come down to. Can you break that script defensively? Namely, my thought process being, can you create havoc in the backfield against that O-line, create pressures, forced balls into tight slots, throw balls further off and away, whatever it needs to happen as far as getting Arch Manning uncomfortable. I think that is absolutely crucial. As far
With
as
you.
that side of the ball. On the other, and additionally to
Well,
that,
let's stay there for a second.
okay.
When he's uncomfortable, his mechanics go to shit.
Immediately. Well, it's not too dissimilar to Marcel Reed, but that's a very true thing.
I'll tell you, Marcel's
Or,
mechanics when he's rushed are
right.
better. And
Sure.
again, I'm not a quarterback whisperer by any means, but I played the position and I've studied it, and that's probably what I love watching the most. Marcel's mechanics on the run are different than Arch's mechanics on the run.
They are.
On the run slash hurry, right?
Yeah.
Shifting the pocket to an uncomfortable position is a fair way to put it, maybe.
Sure.
Marcel, And I'm not saying it's a wide chasm, but he's just a little bit better.
I agree.
And I think he just Marcel tends to sail it, whereas Arch tends to spike it. Either spike or wide, whereas Marcel just gets a little deep on it. So I'm sorry, go to the defense. Sorry. I just wanted to put that.
Yeah, no, you're fine. I think looking at as far as the A&M side of the ball is for defense, you have to make tackles in open space. You have to stop guys like shifty guys like Wingo or otherwise getting away. You got to keep those tight ends.
Number
Yeah,
one, absolutely.
about to say, you got to keep those guys from breaking tackles. You got to get them at the point of contact. But
Yes.
be right, but be you know, be just very competitive on air-to-air balls. You've got guys that looking back on this Arkansas game in particular, where did Texas find a lot of success? Well, Arkansas was running zone most of the game. So they were just sitting in open field and
Oh,
able to run around. Like,
terrible zone too. Like it wasn't even good zone. Like they were in
no.
like the softest zone I've ever seen, and it was for four quarters.
Yeah, and that's just unfortunately the way it went. But you flip around and you look at the Texas side of the ball. They have struggled with running quarterbacks. They've struggled with mobile quarterbacks. They have struggled tackling in the open field in their own right many, many times. So, if we're talking like X factors in the game, things I want to see, if I had to pick one guy on this roster for Texas A&M to have just an absolute stud game, Mario Craver, man. So he's been quiet last couple of weeks, got dinged up before that. Catches one ball against South Carolina. I like to think that he's healed up, mainly probably why we didn't see him at all in the Sanford game. Heals up. I want to see him go down the field on more than one occasion and just create some chaos on the defensive side of the ball as
Like
far as getting down the
Notre
field.
Dame style.
Right. That's a guy I want to see do very well. The running game, it very well might be there. It may not be. Texas, that's largely what they have. That's what they've prided themselves on. South Carolina, who's not a very good rush defense, held us in check. We had to air it out, especially in the second half, because that's all we could do.
Yeah,
Don't
well,
put.
yeah. I mean, that second half was the first half was the only telltale sign. The second half, you had no choice. Like you couldn't run for 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Let me give you a couple of metrics real quick. I think you might find interesting. So in SEC, like in conference, like I'm not playing with full season stats because they played Sam, we played Samford. Like I'm not playing with these stats, right? Like let's talk about in conference. I don't care what the rec or who the schedule is. This is in conference.
Who you played?
In SEC games, Texas defensive success falls off a cliff in the second half. They're minus 13% differential between halves. So what that tells me is, one, they don't have Tony Moffitt, right? And two, once the offense runs out of script, right? Once Sark runs out of a script, he's very reactive, and it's not always a positive for the offense, which means the defense is on the field even more. And that's what's happening. While their defensive metrics are crap in the second half, they're spending more time on the field. And quite frankly, they're not going to be as conditioned as well conditioned as we are. I firmly believe that to the bottom of my soul that we are conditioned better than any team in the conference. And then you look at their defense, they allow explosive passes at the like one of the they're in the bottom five of the conference. They give up and then they also excuse me, they also give up 10 or more yard rushes on 17% of attempts. So while we talk about how good their rushing defense is, the reality is they allow explosive plays because a run over 10 yards is absolutely an explosive play. When you talk about passing, what you're probably talking about 20, 25, 30
Probably
yards.
chunk plays, right?
A run that moves the sticks no matter where their sticks are, that's an explosive play. So they give up explosive plays. They suck in the second half, or at least they fall off. Excuse me, I won't say suck. They fall off in the second half. Like that's a recipe for disaster against an A&M team that in the second half comes out of the locker room like they're the 85 Bears.
Well, and I think it's important to talk about culture and mindset. If we look at Mike Elko football team at this stage of the season, what they have been through, the type of games they've had to play, the type of efforts that they've had to put in the second half of games. And this is an incredible stat. I didn't realize this. You realize that we are shutting people out in the second half when we have been trailing at halftime?
It's completely insane.
I mean, minus, of course, the garbage time touchdown that LSU had. You go out there and you dominate in the second half against LSU. You absolutely dominate in the second half against South Carolina. I think the thing that is going to be so
Missouri.
crucial. Yeah, Missouri too. I mean, you dominate in the second half of that game too, even though you were up. You know, like we're talking like second half adjustments are huge. Now, I understand. I was just listening to a podcast. It was actually very fascinating that Elko was on.
Oh, Trey Wingo.
Yes, fantastic.
Yeah, by the way, it's what, Straight Facts, homie?
Yeah, straight facts, homie.
Yeah.
Great podcast.
Trey Wingo, old or form not old, former ESPN anchor. It's called Straight Facts, homie, and he did is about 30 minutes with Mike Elko. I highly advise you go check that out. It was outstanding.
Well, it opened up so much to kind of the inner workings of how he operates. I mean, this isn't, I mean, he said it himself. I think the idea of like you have to have belief going into the locker room at halftime. Otherwise, you've already lost. Like you've got to have it in your mind that you're going to go out there and win in the second half of games, which to
Well, I
our
mean,
team's credit, they have done.
and it's not just coming out of the locker room. Everybody thinks they can
Yeah,
do
like
it coming
going
out of the
into
locker
it.
room. It's going into the locker room, and that's
Right.
where like the semantics actually really matter for people listening. It's the belief going into the locker room before you get any sort of hype speech or you have any sort of scheme changes or whatever, adjustments you make. It's the belief heading into the locker room when you're down like that. And in another statement he made a while back, like, we didn't win that game. Yesterday, or we didn't win that game today. We won that game 6 months ago.
Yeah.
You know,
No.
and again, we keep going back to it, but it's a fact of the matter, man. It's a culture that he's built here. And I think every player would agree. Like, we won that game 6 months ago, 8 months ago. We were putting the work in and sweating and just like wearing our asses out, trying to get better and be a championship level football team. And so that's why, since we've basically previewed this. And we'll now head into the pick for the game. I think we're gonna blow their doors off. I think we're gonna, it'll be tight in the first half, and I think we're gonna do what Texas A&M does in the second half.
I'm going to give you my prediction plus score prediction. I think what's going to happen is Texas A&M will be in a competitive game through about the first 2.5 quarters of this game. I think A&M will be up maybe like a 20 to 17 or something along those lines, or 24 to 17. Litton sitting at the point where they're heading into the fourth. I think A&M locks it down, does what they need to do in the fourth quarter, and by the time it's all said and done, A&M wins this game 34 to 17.
So
That's my prediction.
for me, it's heading into the half, we're either up or down by a point or two, like nothing crazy, right? And I think we come out in the second half and put together just a demoralizing offensive attack. Again, this goes back to culture. If you're gonna pick in the third and fourth quarter, let's just call it the fourth quarter. Let's say we're 24-17 heading to the fourth quarter, right? Fourth quarter, and we have the ball. Are you gonna take Elko's culture or are you gonna take Sarkisian's culture?
Based on what we've seen this year, it's hard
I
to argue.
mean, based off of what you've seen, period.
Yeah.
I'm talking about just the kind of coach they are, period, and what they've shown over their careers.
Yeah.
I will absolutely take A&M to
Right.
just wear the Sips out. I've got this a two-score game. I think it's I think it,
So long as we do everything else right, namely, don't have turnovers.
don't punt the
Don't,
net. I guess that easy.
yeah, I mean, don't have turnovers. Don't allow big special team plays. And for the love of all that is holy, do everything in your power not to get penalized and put yourself in a position.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be penalties. There's going to be
Of course.
questions. We already know that. But the reality is between turnover and special teams, right? Those are the two things that can change the tide in a game, not just because if they change the tide within, like, kind of the complex, like, concept of the football game. But man, don't let that crowd get into it.
No. In fact, you want that crowd wine and cheese in the second half. You
Yeah,
want
you want
the you want
miserable.
them already getting to the point where, okay, where, you know, like this is a culture game. This is a potentially long-standing changing game if you win it. If you go out there and you can prove that your system works and things work out at Texas A&M because of great mindset and great culture and great execution, That's going to go a long way, not just for your fans. That's going to go great with your recruiters. And that's going to go, I mean, for your recruits. And above that, the national perception likely changes
Well,
about what Texas A&M football is forever. I mean, people have already been talking about it. This would be the stamp.
I mean, it also goes well for the recruiters.
Oh, no,
Well,
absolutely goes great for the recruiters. I mean,
you have substance to bring to the conversation, like not just
right.
what we're building, like look what we've built.
Right. And also this will end up killing at least some arguments about people like, well, who's A&M played? Well, that's another ranked win on the road at the end of the season. Like you're 12-0. What I mean, what more do you want from us?
Literally could not have done anything better.
Are you not entertained?
Outside, I guess, style points. But you know what? In the playoffs, style points don't matter like they used to.
Style points don't mean jack diddly squat. The only thing that matters at the end of the day is what who has the more points on the scoreboard than the other team.
Style
We
points matter for individual trophies. That's it.
right. And we've got plenty of guys that are competing for those, and I'm thrilled for them. Of course. Whether it's Heisman or otherwise, I'm excited that there's guys in the conversation. But at the end of the day, this is Texas A&M football. What do we want? We want to win. We want to
Yeah.
win at the high level. We want to be in the conversation this time of year, which we are. You've done everything that we've asked you to do. We're asking you to do one more and then do another one after that and do another one after that. This is just another rung on the ladder for you to get to your end goals.
Yeah, I mean, we're three quarters of the way through our season. If you look at it like from an appropriate, like we're going to win a championship
Right.
kind of mindset. So it's again, and I think that's why we may not see Moss this week.
Yeah.
Like this game isn't as important as what's in front of us. So, but I'm excited, man. I love Thanksgiving. I love this week. I love cooking. Obviously, I got the turkey and the brine this morning, so I'm gonna get a good 48-hour brine on that sucker, that little mother clucker.
Right.
Yeah, excited to have friends over. Sean and Ronnie coming over. Obviously, the kiddos coming over. Like, I love Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
This. Getting into that time of year, man. And as soon as Friday hits, I'll be pulling all the decorations out of the attic.
Oh, yeah. No, we're, and especially and that's another important thing. I don't Christmas before Black
Nope.
Friday. I do not. I
I
will
don't
not.
Thanksgiving before Halloween. I don't Christmas before Thanksgiving.
Yep. Give them
We're
their.
living in a society.
We are living in a society. Okay. So we have a handful of questions we need to get to. This was going to be a long podcast. It already is. It's totally fine because y'all are still here. We appreciate it.
Rivalry hate. Let's go.
Okay. So James Davis fires in. He had a couple of questions for us. What are you most thankful for from this season so far?
Coach Elko.
Tommy Moffat.
Nice. I was gonna say
Very
Coach.
thankful for him.
Yeah, I was gonna say Coach Elko putting together the staff and the team that he has, and Moffitt's got to be at the top of that list, man.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that all ties in. I think it's been a very special season. I think everybody around here can attest to that. I mean, last time A&M went undefeated at Kyle, it's been a while.
If Elko's Santa, like, is important to like the commercial world of Christmas,
Head elf.
then Tommy Moffitt is like Elf on the Shelf, dog. He's everywhere.
And you know what I thought was really good? The preview, the video that got uploaded onto Instagram where Tommy Moffitt's going around talking to all the guys, respect the helmet, play like a fighting Texas Aggie today. The fact that he said fighting Texas Aggie,
He gets it.
extend him forever. He gets it.
Yes. In perpetuity, if you
In
will.
perpetuity, he gets it. All right. Now, what is your favorite Thanksgiving side dish, and what dish needs to go?
Okay. Well, look, cranberry sauce can go, man. I'm sorry.
Immediately gone.
And I know that's not, well, it's a side dish. Like I grew up eating it out of the can, right? Still has like the ribs from the can. I have made some of probably the world's top cranberry sauce recipes and followed them to a T. I just can't get behind it. So that's got to go, dog. Best side, for me, it's green rice. So green rice is a family recipe. Everybody's kind of got this recipe. It's just, I'm sure ours is just tweaked a little different, but it's kind of a broccoli cheese rice thing.
Yeah.
Green rice, Can't keep that in the house, man. Like, that's the one like side dish that I don't have to worry about needing Tupperware for because it gets destroyed.
All right. Dr. Chad E.
Hold
Nelson.
on, no, what's your question for you too?
Okay, well, if I had, like I said, cranberry
You
sauce is
fired
out.
cranberry sauce into the sun. Yeah,
Yeah,
we already did that.
cranberry sauce is out. Man, I love mac and cheese. Just give me mac and cheese. I'm all about it.
Talking about just like simple mac and cheese? You're talking about like the baked with the breadcrumbs, like homemade style?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
Throw that in there.
I'll eat crappy mac and cheese too.
I said,
I'm kidding.
I'll eat mac and cheese because I just like mac and cheese.
Yeah,
I
I'm a
mean,
chuck.
it's kind of the perfect side dish for me. Big fan.
For everything.
Everything. Hell, put it with a steak all day long.
You know what the you know what you actually you know what mac and cheese pairs the best with? Like 100%, this is the best pairing for mac and cheese as a side, is mac and cheese as a main dish.
Boom. I don't disagree with that thought process. I'm all about it. Okay. Dr. Chatty Nelson fired in. He said,
Nerd, nerd, nerd,
nerd.
nerd.
Am I crazy or do we win by double digits? Feels like we win every position group. Secondary could be a push.
You're not crazy. There's a reason that you're a doctor, because you're not crazy. I firmly believe that this is a double digit, if not two score game. Maybe not just 10 points, maybe 14. Like
And it very
20.
well, yeah. I mean, I'm not too off from that thought process either. I mean, you've shown it throughout the season. I know there's a lot of talk, a lot of hype about the game. Everybody's looking at what's happening with Arch. We broke down the game. I'm with you. I think there's a good probability we could win this game, and
Well,
I wouldn't be shocked if it was by a couple scores.
I think Chad's right. Outside of the secondary, I think we're better at every position group. What the other push I would give is punt returner. Niblett
Concepcion, both solid.
Concepcion, Bussey, but on
Bussy.
kick return, I'd give us the plus. So it's, yeah, I cannot wait to see the orange bloods crap when it comes to like who has the edge. Cannot wait.
All right. So,
Eating a lot of raspberries today.
yeah. Jive Coach G.
Nice.
Holiday music. What are your top songs? And Rob, when is Carson going to drop a Thanksgiving album?
All right.
Now,
Well, I'm gonna let you answer that first.
you're not going to get a Thanksgiving album. We're going to do a Cowboy Christmas thing that's going to be kind
Nice.
of alluding to rodeo stuff in July that we'll put around in July, and that might be kind of a fun little tie-in. But
Like
that's about
Christmas
as
in July.
yeah. But I mean that's about as far as that's going to go. But
That's fair.
we'll do that one later.
I mean, ask Mariah Carey. I don't think Thanksgiving albums are the deal.
No.
For me, my go-to is like generally the very first thing I put on every Friday morning as soon as I wake up, to wake everybody in the house up. The Friday after Thanksgiving is Bing Crosby, White Christmas.
Classic.
It's an absolute go-to. I have no
Classic.
choice. Other favorites are obviously Bublé. There are some very I'm really big into like the more classic Christmas stuff, like the 40s, 50s, and 60s kind of
Yeah.
stuff. Obviously love Mariah. She's thawing as we speak.
Oh, she's right there on the edge, man. She's about to break.
And while Bublé is new, obviously his style is more kind of 40s, 50s. So I love the
Crooner, crooner.
he's a crooner. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and also, I will absolutely dozens of times throughout the Christmas holidays listen to the entire Chipmunks Christmas album.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a classic. No. Man, so I tend to break this down into what's my favorite, like secular one versus pop. As far as like, well, I mean, like versus traditional, right? Secular versus traditional as far as Christmas music. Traditional, Oh Holy Night is one of my
Oh,
tops.
no, yeah. I mean, if we're gonna go absolutely traditional, then I will listen to Christmas hymns all day long. In fact, there's a
Sure.
playlist that has like a crackling fire behind it.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely the jam. But to wake everybody up, it's always Bing.
I'll say, and that one's, yeah, I mean, that one's up there. And big fan of
Silent Night.
Trans-Siberian Orchestra doing their Carol of the
Yes.
Bells every
Yes.
time.
Carol of the Bells. Absolutely.
As far as like other popular ones, man, I like
Christina
it.
Aguilera has one or two bangers.
Yeah. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Oh,
The Christmas song,
Bob.
man.
Oh gosh, what is it? It's chipmunks roasting on an oak. Oh, Bob Rivers. Bob
Bob
Rivers Christmas
Rivers.
is some of the most offensive stuff you'll ever listen to, but it is hilarious.
Oh, good to know. We'll keep that one in the chamber for
You ever
later.
heard Bob Rivers?
I need to listen to it.
Oh yeah, so he's a comedian that sings, and so that song is actually chipmunks roasting on an open fire.
Love it.
So.
All right.
Oh, here you go. One more. The restroom door said, "Gentlemen," so I just walked inside. Yeah.
Oh boy. Awesome. Okay, moving on. We got two more questions. Jonna Lee asks, where in the world is Lane Kiffin? Okay. I'm gonna let you in on my theory. I think Lane Kiffin is absolutely playing everybody for a fool and he's staying at Ole Miss. That's what I think.
I could see a world where that absolutely happens.
Because think about how this has played out. You have led LSU along and you've led Florida along, and it's so much to the point that you have seen numbers pop up into the real world.
He
And
hasn't led them.
all
He
he
hasn't.
has to do is turn around and be like, nah, I'm staying home. And that completely ruins LSU's push. That completely ruins Florida's push. And that potentially hurts your recruiting rivals. Why wouldn't you just stay at Ole Miss in this situation?
He hasn't led them along. He's completely played them.
I think so.
Played them like a fiddle, man.
I think so.
I think oddly enough, because remember that was back to back. Family was in Gainesville, family was in Baton Rouge. Bro, you know what? I think he stays at Ole Miss. He's got a great situation there. Like he's cleaned himself up. His family seems to be happy. Man, and honestly, if he stays at Ole Miss, one, I love that.
Same.
Two, like you have just taken Florida and LSU down a week or two of extra time that they could have been vetting other prospects.
Exactly. And I
Florida's
think.
not so much concerned about, but LSU, dude, take him down the rabbit hole and then pull the carrot out. Let's go.
Well, and if this was all about like being competitive and going to the playoff, hello, you're there. You know, like you don't have to go to LSU to do that. You don't have to do that at Florida. You have turned Ole Miss into a destination spot for top level recruits. You've turned it into what has become a very close to top tier SEC program. You're not quite an Alabama, you're not quite a Georgia, but you're
Come
right
to the
there
ship.
along. I mean, they're along the level where they're at a point where they are competitive.
Come to the ship,
Come to the
right?
SIP. It holds weight, whether people like it or not. Ole Miss is moving the right direction with Lane Kiffin, and I think it would be, I won't call it career suicide, but I'll say that he would do a lot of bad by leaving Ole Miss, I think, long term, because that is another burned bridge for a guy who has done everything in his power to rebuild himself. And I think Ole Miss is the perfect spot for him. He should stay there.
It will, if he does move, it'll be his last coaching move. Nobody's going to touch him at this point, especially
No.
if he does leave the way he's playing his team that's going to the playoffs. Like, I mean, I think you'd be a fool to, yeah. This whole situation is nuts. I think he stays at Ole Miss because I think he needs to stay at Ole Miss.
I completely agree with you. Also from Jonna, thoughts on the commentary of this season, mainly SEC Short's portrayal of battered Aggie syndrome. I love it.
They're so dialed in. They're so good. Like,
They get better and better every year.
and it's shocking because of how short of a turnaround that they run them on. But yeah, no, I love SEC shorts. Funny side note. So the brunette that has been playing battered Aggie syndrome apparently found out that she was a bone marrow match to somebody who needed a transplant. So like, they don't listen to this. They're never going to see this. But I would just love to give a massive shout out to her. Like,
Yeah.
a bone marrow transplant. I've never done it, but from what I've heard, it is not an
Painful.
enjoyable time.
Very painful.
So massive, massive kudos to her and tip of the cap and all of the praises and prayers over her for doing that, for being able to donate to somebody that needed a bone marrow transplant. So, but yeah,
Amazing.
it's been great. It's been great to watch them basically like shove BAS in the closet, pretty much in a locker.
Well, I think the thing that I appreciate about her being involved, I mean, you have the side characters that have popped up and become very regular in these SEC shorts, like the idea of Hope being a very dangerous thing for top level teams that are competing. And the
Hope
fact
is
that,
for everybody.
yeah, Hope is for everybody. And I love the fact that that's a thing. But you incorporate battered Aggie syndrome, and it's pretty clear to me that as time goes, the SEC shorts guys are learning more and more about everybody else across this conference, and they start to understand culture across the board. They have the fun. I mean, just within A&M as a focus, you've had a yell leader portrayal on there, which has made multiple recurring appearances. Totally fine with it. He's kind of goofy, but then again,
Oh, yeah.
we love our yell leaders. They're a little goofy sometimes. Love you, but
And we're working on it.
that's part of the gag. That's what it needs to be. It has to be a little goofy. But you get those, and now you've incorporated battered Aggie syndrome, who makes her debut appearance last year right before we played LSU. And I love the fact that they've continued to incorporate her into the system, and you have made this goofy little love triangle now between her and Hope with A&M,
It's
because
not a love
that's the
triangle, it's a jealousy
it's
triangle.
a jealousy triangle, but it's true, right? You have Aggies that are fighting between having hope for the season, but going back to the mean, what they know. And that what they know is misery and disappointment, which is what battered Aggie syndrome is in a nutshell. So it's been so good to see that dynamic play out. I love what they do. Everything that they have done recently has been amazing. I want to continue to give a big shout out to those guys. Josh Snead is a national treasure and needs to be protected.
They rarely miss. I'll give them
Yeah,
that.
they do rarely miss. Okay. Final question. This is from David Madren. He said, do we empty the stadium early in the third or late in the third?
I'll go middle to late of the third.
I'm going to go fourth quarter. I think it'll really start pouring out fourth quarter. I think the A&M scores early in the fourth, and that puts us up by a couple scores. They're gone.
I think we come out of the half and I think we impose our will, and it's very South Carolina looking in the sense that we score, stop, score, stop.
I'll be way cool with that.
So that's about halfway through the third quarter, right? Score, stop, score, stop.
Yeah,
So
should be about that.
I'll go with middle to late third quarter.
Then
And
late third.
I think by the time we hit the fourth quarter, you're going to hear the war hymn on TV.
Yeah.
Like, that's how loud it's going to be, and that's how few fans in burnt orange will still be in the stadium.
Yep. Like I said, this is we've talked about it. We've been alluding to it. We've been all over it on this podcast. It is rivalry week. It is Lone Star Showdown week.
Shootout.
Texas,
I don't call it showdown. Shootout.
shootout.
Lone Star shootout, Red River shootout. Let's get back to not having hurt feelings and bring back the Washington Bullets while we're at it.
Yeah. So everything's in front of you, boys. You know what you have to do. Texas, they're a good football team. They're not you. And you got to go out there and show it. That's going to be the big thing. But if we've learned anything this season, if we learned anything from Mike Elko and his boys, they have proven time and time again that they know what the challenge is, that nothing is new to them. Life is going to continue to move forward, and they're going to go out there and win a football game.
And they've seen it, and they've seen and proved that they can do it in just about literally any manner. So
It's
I
like,
like our chances. I love that the Aggie band will be there. I love that from what I've seen, they're going to be a ton of freaking Aggs there. So
they're estimating anywhere from 20 to 25,000, which would just be insane in that stadium.
that's like turning, that's like what we used to do at Baylor. I mean, come on.
That would be absolutely insane. So, Rivalry Week, folks, we love y'all. It was amazing. Enjoyed the podcast today. Be sure to check us out on our socials. That's going to be Roy May 15 on X, Roy May Jr. on Instagram, Rob the Slapper on both X and Instagram. Be sure to follow the Red Ass Podcast. Be sure to give us a like, comment, subscribe, hit the little bell so you know when we're uploading. All that fun jazz. And if you enjoyed what we did, yeah, please leave a comment. If you have some Texas friends that you know are gonna just be hating any and everything that they have, feel free
Be
to send it their way.
the worst hour in 20 minutes they've heard this week.
Yeah, pretty darn close. But you know what? You gotta send it to them. Right? Just give people the opportunity to enjoy a little talk, a little
Or hate
chat,
us.
or
Give them the
hate
opportunity
us.
to hate us. I'm good with that. It's hate week. Let's go.
Give us a little hate. It's okay. Comment on my goofy mustache. Comment on the fact that this guy is a bass player. Ooh, he can play guitar. You know, whatever you got to do to poke at us. I mean, go for it. I don't care. It's rivalry week. Bring it on.
Let's
I'm all
go.
about it. But it's that time. I'm excited. You're excited.
It's
We're
time.
ready
I
to go.
want to wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving. I
Yes.
understand that this you have busy travel week weekend, so please be safe traveling. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. Enjoy your time with your family. Be thankful that you get to spend some time with family and or friends. It's such a wonderful time. That Thanksgiving really kicks off the holidays, and so I wish you all a very, very safe and a very happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Don't eat too much, and if you do, you'll wake up like middle of the third quarter of the Cowboys game. You're good.
And just as a quick aside, if you are traveling, just be mindful. There's a system coming through this week. Like we just had that first line come through this past week. They're anticipating another one immediately after Thanksgiving. So if you are traveling this during this time, just be safe out there. Be smart, weather aware, and
Be
above all
patient.
else,
Be
what is it?
patient.
Be
Be patient.
patient. Yeah, at the end of the day, you'll get there one way or the other. If you're a hair late, you're a hair late, but that's life. We're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. You just got to keep on driving. So, I am Rob White. This is Roy May. We are the Red Ass Podcast. Take care. Beat the ever living, ever loving compound complex hell out of TU. See
Jacob.
y'all next week. Gig 'em.